Nathan, thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, it's lovely to be here. It's been terrific for us to catch up with Graham and Karen Dean, who've been friends for so very long on the other side of the mountain, and to spend time with you and to meet your team. And I was just admiring your screen, and that's very novel. We don't have one of those out at Tambar Springs. But in a way that reflects the way the changing world we live in, I'm going to say a couple of things about Overseas Council Australia. Recently, I visited one of our colleges, which is at Bandung in east of Jakarta. But I went to church in Jakarta. I'd been asked to speak at this brand new church that a friend of mine, who was a businessman, was also the head pastor of. It was extraordinary. So we went along to Christ Cathedral, it was called. It was massive, purpose-built, great big thing. They told me I'd be talking to 6,000 people. And we walked in on the Saturday morning to see where I'd be talking from. And I was staggered. They had the biggest screen I've ever seen. They'd had it made in China, and it was 4 metres high by 40 metres long. Anyway, it had the church's logo over on one side. Then it had a picture of me taken from the net, and I still had black hair. And this little Indonesian fellow came up to me, he looked at the photograph, and he looked at me, looked between the two again. He said, "Just how long ago was this photo taken?" But I wasn't worried by that, because in this massive, the second half of it, remember this thing, that's still about 20 metres by 4 metres, they had right up the top, very polite and very kindly, the little words, "We welcome our guest." And then in huge writing on the screen, "John Anderson." And then in the fine, little sort of tiny fine print, you know, that you sort of miss until something goes wrong and you have to go back and see what you've done wrong? You meant to sort of miss it? It had two very significant words, and deputy. And then underneath that in massive writing, it had Prime Minister of Australia. And I thought, good grief. I know that I could take it back to Canberra and show it to the Prime Minister and say, there's been a coup. The problem is that by the time I got back to Canberra, there had been a coup and we had a different Prime Minister. You are extraordinarily blessed to have a ministry team here. You have your man Nathan and Elizabeth by side, and Travis, who I don't know so well. And they are able every Sunday to, in great faithfulness, with great learning behind them, the experience of the years which they've learnt at college, the expertise of the centuries in unpacking this extraordinary thing called the Bible, the scriptures, for you and for us. We are privileged beyond belief to have that in our churches in Australia. I should add that when it goes wrong and when theological education is weak, the churches become weak and then the church is empty. But you and this church are not in that situation. So there's a plug for Nathan and his team. You're very fortunate to have them. As I've been fortunate, Julia's been fortunate, we've had good Bible preaching people who've been able to unpack the great truths for us. But the reality is that that is not the case for countless millions of Christians around the world today. Countless millions, you say? In our culture, we feel like that we're in the minority, don't we? We read every day that the census has revealed that there are more atheists in Australia. It's a complete misreading of the census, by the way. If you unpack the data carefully, the number of atheists in Australia has not changed for about a century. And the people who tick the no religion box are just as likely to pray and believe there's a God as people who are in this congregation today. But that's not what the media wants you to believe. We're told that it's outdated and science has made it irrelevant. And suffering means that we're so sophisticated, we who don't suffer very much, have the best care in the world, that somehow or other that disproves God. And so we're told religion's dying out. Well, again, the data, the actual facts tell you that it's the secularists who are dying out because they're mainly Westerners and we're breeding ourselves out of existence. In reality, this century that we've now entered will be one of enormous ferment over beliefs and what people and how people and who people will worship. That's what's actually happening. And so you have an explosion of Christianity across China, despite the Cultural Revolution when it was thought the church was dead. The best official estimates that you can sort of get hold of, I'm fascinated by data, is that there are 150 million believers in China. Get your mind around that, 150 million. And even the government, which is trying to clamp down on it, believes it'll rise to 250 million. Indonesia, I just touched on Indonesia, the fourth most populous nation on earth, right on our doorstep, most populous Muslim nation on earth, but 15% of the population are Christian. There are 100 Bible colleges in Indonesia. Can you believe that? 100. In Buddhist Myanmar, there are 100 Bible colleges. Then you come to Africa, where 70% of sub-Saharan Africans are now Christian. 100 years ago, it was about 10 million. Today, it's 700 million estimated in Africa alone. And yet, if you take the Anglican Church in a place like Uganda, staggering numbers of parishes simply do not have a minister around whom they can congregate to celebrate the Word of God and to unpack it and to learn and to grow. They don't have one. There's no such thing. The Bishop of Uganda is desperately scrambling to find people who will train themselves and be trained so that they can pastor properly. So I have come over the years to love and respect Overseas Council Australia, and I was asked onto the board when I stepped down as Deputy PM. I've been on the board now for about 8 or 9 years and have been for the last 3 years the chairman of Overseas Council Australia. That's a funny name. It doesn't have any religious significance, does it? That's quite deliberate. Because in some of the parts of the world where we're very active, you know, we don't want to make it uncomfortable for people who may be facing persecution for their beliefs. But Overseas Council Australia, we have sister organisations in Canada, in America, in New Zealand, which punches way above its weight, by the way. We need to do better in Australia. Tiny little New Zealand raises a huge amount of money. Germany. And what we do is we identify good Bible colleges in indigenous cultures. Missionaries have gone out from Europe and America and Australia, and churches have grown and people have been converted, but they need indigenous cultures. In Indonesia alone, the church probably needs 500,000 Bible-trained leaders for everything from youth groups to pastoring churches to leading theological colleges. The need is extraordinary. And I would say to you two things. As a Christian, I believe primarily because we want people to be saved. As somebody who's concerned for good order and mercy and justice and democratic freedoms, I say to you, you can do nothing better for a country that is struggling to enjoy the freedoms and the prosperity we take for granted than to see the wonderfully civilizing influence of the Christian gospel take hold and people start to concern themselves about their neighbours and about their community and about their children in a way that is not the default position for human beings, as we all know, if we stop and think about it. So that's what Overseas Council does. We have a board. I'm the chairman at the moment. A man asked politely this morning, "Are you careful with your expenditures?" I said, "Yes." He said, "What do they pay you?" I said, "No one on the board has paid anything. We try to make sure as much of our dollars that are donated as possible go to the field. What do those dollars do in the field? What do we do in the field? Well, we've got about 35 or 40 colleges we support. Papua New Guinea, Indonesia, Myanmar, China, Mongolia, Pakistan, India, the Philippines, the Middle East, throughout Africa. We'll provide scholarships for students. $2,200 is our base product. And $2,200 in one of those countries, imagine how far that would go supporting a student in Australia. That pays for their fees and their food and everything for a year so they can study. Right through to supporting faculty members, good teachers, costs a little bit more for them, through to helping them build their lecture theatres or update their library or their computer equipment, or in the case of the one in Myanmar, we put in an uninterrupted power supply so that the air conditioning would keep working on stinking hot days in Yangon because the power goes out all the time. We also provide consultancies on everything from town planning for the college in New Guinea, which is on a beautiful site and was built in the 60s and needs to be upgraded, through to theological consultancies and management consultancies and so forth. And our whole objective is to, if you like, backfill the incredible work that God has blessed through the missionaries from the West, and as the church grows in so many of these countries, help them train up their own indigenous leaders for their own churches so that they can enjoy the enormous privilege that you and I do of having people that we can love and relate to who are of us, who can unpack the Bible for us the very way that Nathan and his team do for you every Sunday. That's what we do. There's some further information down the back if you'd like to pick it up on the way out.